So today we're going to move on with this analysis of nonlinear capacitors. Last time, kind of as a review, kind of prepping for our next LOX mechanism, went through and looked at a synchronous half bridge with a current IL that was constant, either positive or negative, and looked at the different switching actions that would occur. And basically covered all types of different switching actions. Soft and hard turn off, soft and hard turn on, with the losses that occur in those. Here we were focused really on this overlap type loss mechanism, but we could go back through and for each of these edges decide for any other loss mechanism whether or not it would occur. For example, where would diode reverse recovery occur in this waveform? Assuming our body diodes, RPN type, exhibit reverse recovery characteristics, at which of these edges would I expect to see diode reverse recovery? When G2 turns on, which is, what are these numbers for me? 4, everybody agree? Yeah, 4. So this is the edge where prior to this edge, the current is flowing up through the body diode of device M1. Then I turn on M2. It's going to have to, in addition to those overlap losses, which will occur during the time that it's taking over the current from that high side body diode, once it takes over that current fully, if we just have overlap, the voltage starts changing. We go into the Miller plateau. If we additionally have reverse recovery, we need to not only take over all of IL, but we're going to need to go past that, take over a current higher than IL to remove all that reverse recovery charge before that high side diode begins turning off. We'll just have the reverse recovery kind of on top of those overlap waveforms. So moving forward, what we're going to be looking at is really the losses due to this drain to source capacitance of each device, and move from analyzing the losses in hard switching operations to analyzing the circuits in these kind of resonant transitions and how we can eliminate a lot of these losses with soft switching operations. Okay. So assumption is that both devices have this drain to source capacitance. Last lecture, we were looking at the behavior of this drain to source capacitance. Looking at COSS, which as we noted is CDS plus CGD, but CGD is so much smaller that we kind of say COSS looks a lot like CDS. And the COSS capacitance is highly nonlinear. This is the capacitance across the depletion region when the device is blocking voltage. As the voltage goes up, that depletion region expands and the capacitance changes. Like a parallel plate capacitor where I'm moving the plates apart as the voltage goes up, so the capacitance drops down. And the exact trend of this COSS VDS line depends on the internal device structure, how it was made. But as we were motivating last time, this is a nonlinear capacitance and it's very difficult to work with nonlinear elements in hand analysis. Once an element becomes nonlinear, none of our kind of circuits one type equations apply anymore. What we'd like to do is develop a way to find a fixed linear capacitance that models a certain characteristic of this curve, which will allow us to go back and use all of our hand analysis, allow us to use our circuit analysis that we're all experts in now. So the question is, what value should I pick? And it depends on what I want to look at. If I want to look at the energy, I should pick some value of capacitance that is going to give me the same amount of energy when I charge that capacitance up to the same voltage. Same thing with charge. So we're going to develop these equivalents based on some parameter that we want to be the same. So let's dig into that. I'm going to look at really this energy and charge equivalent. This publication listed down here at the bottom talks about some other types of equivalents based on time and matching energy on the series impedance. The two will focus on our energy and charge equivalents, which are kind of the most often useful. So what I'm going to do for a derivation here is I'm going to look at the nonlinear capacitor, and I'm going to figure out how much energy is in it at a given voltage, how much charge is on it at a given voltage. And I'm going to match those to my linear capacitor equation that'll let me solve for the linear capacitance to give me the same energy, same charge. Okay? So to do that, energy and charge in a cap, it doesn't really matter what circuit it came from. So I can really just look at a general nonlinear capacitor, C, which is a function of the voltage on the cap. Note, IC is the current in this capacitor. Okay. And I'm going to look at somehow through some external circuit, taking the voltage on this capacitor, V sub C, from zero up to some value VDC, and kind of irrelevant how I get there. I'm just going from zero up to that, and I'm going to look at the amount of energy going into it. Okay. As kind of a review of homework one, I'll do it first for the linear case and then apply the same analysis to the nonlinear case. So up here will be linear, and I'm going to look at charge and energy. So if I have just some linear capacitor, I can say that the charge stored by that capacitor is the integral of the current that flows into it. From time 0 to t, and that would be my charge at time t. Based on my capacitor, I can say that this IC is C dVc dt, where for the linear case, C is some constant, right? So here I've got this derivative in time integrated with respect to time. This is a place where we can apply the chain rule for integration or integration by substitution and convert this over from an integral in terms of time to an integral in terms of voltage. I'm integrating in terms of voltage. I need to change my integration limits to the voltage at that time. If I'm having some time domain waveform like this in terms of voltage, I'll choose a time where I'm already out at VDC. So my limits are going to be 0 to VDC. Okay. This integral, quite easy to solve. C is a constant, so I can bring it out front. Integral of 1 from 0 to VDC, it's VDC. U is equal to CV. Surprise. Okay. You could have told me that right off the bat. So let's do the same for energy. My energy is the integral 0 to T of I sub C, V sub C, the product of voltage and current on the cap. I'm going to integrate that up to get the total energy. I'm going to take the same steps here. I'll plug in C dVc dt, VC. I'm going to drop my of T parentheses. So let me put this all on here. Apply the same chain rule. And then integrate. My C pulls out front, but VC is my variable of integration. So I'll get VC squared over 2, evaluated from 0 to VDC, gives me 1/2 C VDC squared. So, how do these change when I have a nonlinear cap? Okay. So, I can use the same derivation process. The difference is really going to be at this step. C is no longer some constant value. I can't pull it out of the integral. Right? It varies with the parameter I'm integrating, so I have to actually integrate it. So I can start from the same point and then come down to Q is equal to the integral from 0 to VDC. I'm looking at this step here in both cases. But now C is a function of VC. And this is about as far as I can go. This is some nonlinear function. Unless I have a analytical description of that function, I can't integrate it. As we said last class, there are some analytical curve fits for these, but generally they're not applicable to all devices. They're kind of for the most simple power device you can make and don't fit modern power devices very well. However, this integral is very easy to evaluate numerically. So if I have this nonlinear curve, I know what the values, what the points are that constitute this curve, and very easily integrate that using MATLAB or some other tool. And this would just be the integral of that curve over my range from 0 to BDC, okay? The area under the curve. For energy, I'm going to get to the same point. Energy is the integral from 0 to VDC of C, which is a function of VC, times VC, dVC. Okay. The difference between the two, here I'm just integrating the capacitance. Here I'm integrating the product of the capacitance and voltage. Okay. Here. Cannot simplify without either one, an analytical expression, expression for C of VC, or two, evaluating numerically. So these are the two characteristics of this nonlinear capacitor that I can derive independent of whatever circuit it's in. Good question.
Evaluating numerically, is that just for one specific operating point?
So it would be for the capacitor at this voltage, right? So you'd have really E is different in every voltage. And if I evaluate that for each voltage, I'll get a value at every voltage. What I'll get back is really this curve here, which is from the data sheet, a measured curve of the energy in that capacitor at a given voltage. This, some new high performance devices have. A lot of devices won't have this curve in the data sheet. Just about everything will have capacitances. Those are pretty standard, but EOSS, a little more rare to find for a given device. However, now you can create that curve, right? Just use this, digitize the EOSS curve, which will provide a tool to do that in a moment, and create that curve. Okay, so now for my equivalent capacitances, this is the actual energy in the nonlinear capacitor. This is my expression for what the energy would have been in a linear capacitor. So if I just equate these two, with this being my real capacitance and this being what I'm trying to solve for, the equivalent linear capacitor that would give me the same energy, then I can solve for what that linear capacitor is. Okay. So my charge and energy equivalent capacitors, what I'm saying is that the linear case, so I'm going to set my charge as equal. My nonlinear charge is integral from 0 VDC, C of VC, DVC. And I'm going to set that equal to my expression from the linear case, C VDC, and I'm going to call this capacitance my CEQ comma Q. That's my linear equivalent capacitor that will have the same charge at this voltage. Okay. And I solve that pretty simple. So here is my linear equivalent capacitor based on charge. An interesting thing about this particular expression, I'm integrating from 0 to VDC, some function, and dividing by VDC. That is really an averaging function. So this is exactly the average capacitance over the voltage range. Okay. That's because charge is linear with respect to current. As I move up, it's just the integral of that current. It's a linear operation. So just the average value is all that matters. Okay. So if you remember, expression that's used in the power book that we use in 481, Fundamentals of Power Electronics, these angle brackets are an averaging over a range VDC, just the average. Okay. For energy, I do the same thing. It was go from 0 to VDC of C of VC times VC DVC. I'm going to set that equal to 1 half C VDC squared. And I'm going to call this C my equivalent based on energy. And now I can solve for that equivalent capacitance. And that should be like this. So this is now a weighted average where I am weighting the capacitance curve by the voltage. Okay. And that's because with energy, it goes proportional to VDC squared. So I'm getting more energy up at high voltages for a given delta V in any cap, right? It takes more energy to go from 100 to 101 than it does to go from 0 to 1 volt, okay? So when I average out, the higher values of voltage are weighted more heavily in that average because there's more energy going into the cap up there. So normally what you should find for the COSS type curves, which are in nearly all cases monotonically decreasing with voltage. Every step I go to higher voltage, the capacitance is either decreasing or flattening out. So because CEQQ, my charge equivalent capacitance, is just the average, this one is an average that's weighted towards the high voltages. This one should always end up being smaller than this one. Okay. That makes sense? Okay. So what I want to do now is, using these equivalent capacitors, I'm going to look at the capacitive energy loss when I switch a half bridge. Let's hop back here. Okay. I've mentioned before the problem with this capacitance. If I've got voltage on CDS and I turn the device on, I'm shorting out that cap. I'm going to lose all of its energy. Okay. So again, look at this top case, IL greater than zero. Which of these transitions do I expect to see energy loss from those capacitances? Four again, right? Here, for the same reasons. Before I turn on M2, the current's all going up through that high side body diode. V switch is clamped at VDC. And then I turn on this device, go through this overlap. But as I'm going through that, I'm effectively shorting out this cap, dissipating all of its energy just in a loop right here. Okay. At the same time as I am shorting out that cap, I am forcibly charging this cap by pulling that switch node voltage down. So this one goes from VDC to zero through this resistor. The high side goes from zero to VDC through this resistor. Okay. So this one definitely we said earlier, reverse recovery loss, if it exists, and CLSS loss would be the same thing here. Okay. This one depends, right? So I drew this range of curves for what could happen in here. And it's on dead time and current in the inductor and L and C values, which we'll get into the analysis of soon. But if I am on kind of this lower curve, I'll have some COSS loss. I'm going to be shorting, instead of VDC, shorting this range of voltage out of the cap and charging the other cap at the same range. If I'm on this top curve, I'll have no COSS loss. I've gone all the way up and gotten zero voltage across the device before I turn it on. Okay. So that was the 0.6. Hopefully that's a statement that'll make sense later when we look at these notes. But what I'm saying is that whether or not I have any COSS loss depends on what the voltage is at the time I turn on the other device. It's a different device for each one, so I don't want to call it out. But kind of on all these, I'd have some have the most here, a little bit less, zero here, more or less zero, the body dial conduction, but still kind of no loss from this USS. Right, all clear? Okay, good. So when I have this transition, so I'm going to look at this one that we just talked about, this transition 5, where I turn on one device with full voltage across it. And for the moment, to simplify, I'm not going to worry about the overlap boss dynamics. Assume we already know those, we're comfortable with that. And I'm going to look just at what happens with COSS. So basically, the circuit I'm going to look at is EDC, the high side device is off. Call this one. I turn on this device, an R on, CDS2, ground. At this point, my V switch. Is initially charged up to the high rail, and when I turn on this device, I'm ripping that down to zero. Something not readable? Okay, that's my initial condition for this. So I'm going to look at independently what happens with CDS2 and what happens with CDS1, and then add those effects together. That's the next two slides here. My effect is M2, so I can really just look at this portion of the circuit, which is just this down here, and see what's going to happen with the energy that was stored in CDS2, this equivalent circuit. Here I would say that VC of 0 is equal to VDC, my initial condition, and then at time t is equal to 0, I turn this switch on. Go through and solve this. This should be a review of homework 1. I hope everybody already knows the answer. But I'm going to look at the energy dissipated on resistor R. Okay. So that energy is integral from time 0 to infinity of VR times IR dt. Because I have a single loop here, IR is equal to IC, which is equal to C dv dt. And that capacitance is now my nonlinear capacitance, right? So VR is equal to really 0 minus VC. The negative of the capacitor voltage after the switch turns on. Okay. So if I plug those in, energy dissipated on this resistor, integral from 0 to infinity of minus VC times C dVC dt. dt. And I can again change my base here to the integral from, now VC is going from VDC down to 0, VC, C, DVC. I can flip my limits and get rid of that negative sign. VC, DVC. And now this expression looks familiar. This is the energy in that cap, right? And based on my linear equivalence, I can say that this is 1/2 times my energy equivalent capacitor, VDC squared, just matching this equation to what I had here. Okay. So this is the energy that I'm going to lose due to that capacitance. And it all kind of makes sense. I short out that cap, I lose all the energy that was in it. Okay, pretty simple. To close the loop on the homework, where in this derivation did I use the value of the resistance? Nowhere. Value of the resistance is irrelevant, whether it's zero or infinity. I short out that cap, I lose all its energy. Doesn't matter if the resistor is there or not. Okay. So apologize for lying to everybody who had me in 481. I said if you only have passives and ideal switches, you don't have losses. Well, it turns out even with ideal elements, you can get losses. So if you look at it in the time domain, it's really on the switch itself. If I let that resistance go to zero, by shorting out that cap, it's an ideal cap and a zero resistance loop, I have a step function in the voltage of the cap, drops from VDC to zero instantly, and an impulse of current on the switch at the exact same time. So I have an infinite spike of current. And as you take the limit as resistance goes to zero, that spike of zero time width and the perfect step overlap in a way that this amount of energy will still be dissipated right there on the switch. Neat mathematically, maybe. Functionally, you're always going to have some resistance and it'll dissipate kind of evenly across those resistances. The largest one taking the lion's share of those losses. Yeah. Okay, so that's M2. If we look at the CDS of M1, my circuit now looks like this. So now I'm looking at, instead of this cap, I'm looking at this one. Instead of being discharged down to zero, it's forcefully charged up to VDC. Okay, so that equivalent circuit looks like this. I'm closing the low side switch and through some resistance, charging that cap up to VDC. VC of V is equal to zero is zero, and it's going to go to VDC. So I'm going to again look at the energy loss on this resistor. That's going to look like integral from zero to some infinite time of VR IR dt. IR is here. It's again CdV dt, again the capacitor current. The VR is now the difference between these two voltages. So this looks like integral from time zero to infinity. VR is VDC minus VC. IR is C DVC DT DT. I can do my integration by substitution. Change from VC is going to go from zero to VDC. Keep these guys. And C DVC. And now break this up into two integrals, distributing that C. So this is equal to go from zero to VDC of VDC times C VDC minus okay, and save a little space here. I'm just going to pull this VDC out since that is constant. But my capacitance is nonlinear. It's a function of VC, so I can't pull it out. And VC is the variable I'm integrating. So what does this look like? This looks like our charge. Right. This looks like our energy. So if I plug in my equivalent caps, this is going to look like VDC times my charge, which is VDC times my charge equivalent cap minus my energy, which would be my energy equivalent cap. VDC squared. The last step here, just combine these two VDCs. Okay. So interestingly, I have a different expression for the losses on these two caps. If they're linear, all these equivalents are the same. This would be V squared C minus 1/2, V squared C, V 1/2 C V squared, and I get 1/2 C V squared from the low side cap, 1/2 C V squared from the high side cap. But when they're nonlinear, it's actually a different loss expression for the high side and low side. And also interesting, so these were two parts of one switching action, two parts of when I turn this on, okay? So I can add them together, and that'd be my total capacitive induced loss for that switching action. So let's add these together. Call it E on R1 plus E on R2, the two that we solved. Those are first one, 1/2 energy equivalent. Second one, VDC squared charge equivalent minus 1/2 energy equivalent. Now, I didn't bother putting any notation that this is CDS1, this is CDS2. So in general, those could be two different devices, two different capacitances. Okay? If they are, then the charge equivalent of one will not be the same as the charge equivalent of another. Everything will be different. But if they are the same device, if CDS1 is CDS2, same device, the same nonlinear characteristics, then I've got 1/2 CV squared with the energy equivalent, negative 1/2 CV squared with the energy equivalent. Those are going to cancel. My energy is VDC squared times the charge equivalent. So if I have a matched half bridge, my energy losses are actually not dictated by the energy, the nonlinear energy stored in that capacitance. So going back here, if I have a data sheet that is kind enough to report to me the energy stored in that output capacitance, I actually can't even use this to solve the losses, because it's not dependent on that energy. It's dependent on the amount of charge stored by the cap. Who'd have thought? I think that's interesting. Okay. So in future homeworks and homework, one subpart of homework this week, it's useful to be able to extract this nonlinear capacitance curve and compute some of these equivalents. So what I have is a tool at this length. How much time do I have? Enough time. And this is on the course webpage under the materials tab. I have a direct link to this tool. You don't need to remember this URL. So if I go to the course webpage, materials, plot digitizer. And what that allows you to do is upload a graphic. Really need it? Fine. When did you lose it? Was that the course webpage? So if you go to the course webpage and click on this materials tab right here, plot digitizer, and this is just a online tool that allows you to get a digital representation of this plot. And the way it works is you'll say, define the axes as a 2D plot, and you're going to click four times, first two to show it where the x-axis is, second two to show it where the y-axis is. Say complete. My x-axis goes from 1 to 1,000, the log scale. Y-axis also log 100 to 100,000. And then I can come in and add points on this curve and do a better job than I'm doing. Then say view data, it'll spit out the XY coordinates of all those points, allow you to now have your numerical representation of that curve. Okay. Then you can take that, copy your arrays into MATLAB, make sure you scale. It's gonna give you, based on the numbers you said, the graph went from 10 to 100,000. If the units are picofarads, make sure you scale it. You want this to be in kind of base units. Here I'm just interpolating that data to get higher resolution. So I only did some maybe 15 points in the digitizer, and then I use an interpolation to get points in between all of those. So I have a more continuous data set. And here I'm actually running the integration for the energy equivalent capacitor. Running a cumulative integral of C times V with respect to V. My energy equivalent capacitor, I plug in the expression here. This is plotting my COSS on top of the datasheet curve. So the red line is what's in MATLAB. That's directly digitized. And then this is plotting my calculated energy from that capacitance on top of the data sheet's energy curve, showing that that matches up quite nicely. Okay. So you'll be asked to use these tools later on in the course. And depending on the approach you take to one of the homework problems this week, this could be very useful. A couple of just minor notes here. We've talked about what this nonlinear capacitance means. In most data sheets, somewhere in the tables, they'll give you a value for COSS. And this is the value at these measurement points. This is not, you know, something that's particularly meaningful to your circuit analysis. This is just a single point on that curve. Here's what the capacitance happened to be at 100 volts. Even if you're switching 0 to 100 volts, it's still not relevant. Both the charge and energy equivalence will be significantly higher than that because of the nonlinear characteristics, because it's higher at all voltages below 100. Again, this device had a better data sheet than most. It also gives some effective capacitances. Energy related has the same stored energy, but it's given at a specific, you have one voltage, just the same stored energy at 480. Unless you're worried about the energy at 480, it might not be useful. This TR has to do with the rise time in a resistive charging circuit. What's the equivalent capacitance that would give that same rise time? It's barely, if ever, useful. But if you have more questions on that, it's talked about in the reference I cited earlier. But I draw this out, just point out, generally these, unless by happenstance, aren't going to be the capacitances you need for your circuit operation. They're just some example value. Last thing I'll cover here, just to show the need for these different capacitances. This is, from the reference at the bottom, a simulation of a nonlinear capacitance, which was the COSS of a 200 volt silicon power MOSFET. And what I looked at is just for various charging, taking it from zero to VG, charging it up through either a resistor or an inductor. Okay. And I calculated these different energy equivalents. Charge equivalent was 70 picofarads, energy was 56, and then a couple we didn't cover. The equivalent, which would give me the same ZVS time, the same time for the resonant voltage to rise from zero to VG, and then an impedance equivalent, which would give me the same energy on this series impedance, whether it's a resistor or an inductor. Okay. And then I am plotting here various parameters for each of these different capacitances as I go from, I let the simulation run from when the voltage on the cap is zero to when it reaches VG. So here I'm looking at the energy that's stored in this cap. Lost my legend. My legend is over here. So the blue one is the full nonlinear characteristic simulated. In this case, the red one is my energy equivalent cap. You see that only the red one has the same energy in it when the voltage goes from zero to VG. Charge equivalent and these other two equivalents have a much higher energy in them for that same transition. Okay. And this slide is just looking at some other parameters for charge. Only the charge equivalent will have the same charge as the nonlinear characteristic. Everything else is way off. For voltage at the end of the transition, only my time equivalent cap gets to that voltage at the same time. And then for in a resonant circuit, how much the inductor current changes, only this impedance equivalent has the same inductor current at the end of the interval. Okay. There's motivating, there is actually a need to use these different nonlinear caps. There's not just a single value I can pick and close enough on everything. Okay. That being said, if you have to, offhand, non-formally, my recommendation is really this one, the charge equivalent. It tends to be, for most nonlinear curves, kind of somewhere in the middle. It's always going to be larger than the energy equivalent, but it's kind of close to or smaller than some of these other ones. It's the easiest to calculate. That generally can give you a rough approximation of the all behaviors, even though formally, mathematically, it's going to be wrong for everything except the charge. It's kind of a good compromise if you don't want to go through the effort of calculating each. Okay, any questions? All right, we'll pick up there on Friday. Be safe tomorrow. Be ready to learn Friday, refreshed. See you then. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a question?
Yeah.
So it's about research. When I was saying the other day in meeting that the power transmitted during the dead time was reactive, and that was wrong, obviously.
Do you remember what I was talking about?
I do remember what you're talking about. Your statement there, I don't agree with necessarily. I mean, yes, the power in the dead time is all circulating. It's not going through the output.
It's not going through the output.
For the most part, no. If all the capacitors were linear, none would go through the output. Because they're nonlinear, they're all a slightly different capacitance, and any mismatch has to go through the output. So you might get some current that leaks through the output during the dead time, but for the most part, no.
Well, what I'm getting at is I was working on the paper last night, and I was graphing THD versus dead time, and then I was going to do essentially